everyone. Thanks for joining. We're going to wait a few more minutes for some more attendees to join in. Okay, let's give it two more minutes. All right, I think it's time to get going. Okay, good morning to everyone and welcome to the first event in the UWC calendar for International Open Access Week. My name is Sarah Schaefer and I'll be facilitating the presentations today. We hope that these sessions will foster a meaningful dialogue around open access. Some quick housekeeping. All attendees are going to be muted during the presentations, and we ask that if you have any questions, please write them down and enter them into the chat dialogue, either directly to me or publicly, and we'll have a question session at the end. Before I introduce our two speakers, I'd like to welcome Dr. Shirley Nearpath, the director of the UWC Library, to say a few words.
Very good morning, colleagues. I extend a warm welcome to the University of the Western Cape Open Access Week 2020. The theme is Open with a Purpose, Taking Action to Build Structural Equity and Inclusion. And universities and libraries have been at the helm of open access initiatives, driving from free and open access information to disperse inequity and solidify the knowledge creation in universities and beyond. Also advancing the academy of science in South Africa and beyond in the global world. So the library team under the deputy director, Mr. Alfred Ntoli, has put together he's the deputy director of research and scholarly communication, and has put together a very exciting program focusing on research and open access engagements, which profoundly change the way that universities and researchers and the librarians conduct business present day. So as you all know, in transcending our role and the academic, adding value in the academic arena, present day challenges of COVID-19 has, we seek various solutions for the challenges of the pandemic, both globally and locally and nationally. So this morning's program focuses on data intensive research and driving forth data research management. We have exciting speakers which will share with us, are happy to share with us, and we're so thankful for them for the presentations that they're going to share with you in making sure that we drive open access amicably, and we look towards the research environment to change the way that we are conducting and adding value to the university's mission and vision. Thank you, and I hope you do enjoy the program. Please join us for the entire week, the exciting webinars that we have planned for all our colleagues and participants. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks very much, Shirleen. Okay, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Annelie van Rensburg. She is the regional consultant for Southern Africa at the Carpentries and an extraordinary researcher at Optentia Research Focus Area at the Northwest University. The Carpentries is an inclusive international community teaching data and coding skills. It teaches foundational coding and data science skills to researchers around the world. The Carpentries project comprises the software carpentry, data carpentry, and library carpentry communities, and it includes instructors, trainers, maintainers, helpers, and supporters. Angelique aims at developing strategies and workflows to adapt the Carpentries membership and workshop programs to function optimally in Southern Africa. In addition, her role aims to assist and advise in developing a plan to create and support a strong team of volunteer instructors across Africa. Thank you, Angelique.
Thank you, Sarah. You did such a great job. I don't need to give a presentation anymore. Just kidding. Let me just quickly start sharing my screen and we can get started. Can I maybe just get a thumbs up from the panelists if you can see my screen? Great. Thank you, Shirleen. Right. So good morning, everyone, from a really, really warm Johannesburg where it is 30 degrees Celsius. I am Angelique van Rensburg, the regional consultant for Southern Africa for the Carpentries. And before I go ahead and jump into the presentation, I wouldn't like to say thank you to the University of the Western Cape, more specifically Matty and Sarah, for giving me the opportunity to share what I call I get paid for doing what I'm really passionate for. So that is great, right? Just to jump in, today we're going to have a look at basically two things, a global overview of the Carpentries, which Sarah gave a great introduction about already. And then just zoom in a bit about what are we doing in South Africa and more broadly, Southern and the greater continent. Now, in South Africa, we call it non-governmental organizations, but since the Carpentries is an American-based company, we call it non-profit organization. And the main aim is to provide foundational coding and data science skills to researchers, scholars worldwide, but particularly open software. So a lot of our lessons are based on R, Python, spreadsheets, the free versions. You have OpenOffice, you have LibreOffice, even Google spreadsheets. You can use our lessons to teach that. OpenRefine and Git as well. But more particularly, we want to build communities and local capacities, for instance, in universities, to teach and host these workshops and the skills we want trying to amplify globally. Just a bit of statistics. As of October, and I think this was last week, we have taught more than 2,800 workshops globally. We have 2,900, we call them badged, but it means certified instructors, with Sarah in the room as one as well. And more than 70,000 learners have participated globally in Carpentries workshops. Now, jumping into essential work we work with here at the Carpentries is we have community developed curricula, but more specifically, and Sarah already pointed out to that, we have three schools within the Carpentries. We have software carpentry, data carpentry, and library carpentries. And All of these are usually run over two-day workshops, but in the pandemic, this is clearly not possible. And I'll touch a bit more on the South African efforts with regards to pandemic and how we dealt with that. But we focus on novel level training over 2 days. And we have volunteer instructors applying carpentry's teaching methodology in these workshops. If we look at software carpentry, the audience we're trying to reach out to are researchers who need to program more effectively. The domains are independent. So we focus on more the skill set in the software carpentries, plotting, programming in Python, programming in R, or R for reproducible science analysis. You can see that in a blue, all the links over there. Where the data carpentries are more focused on researchers who deal with data. So how do we manipulate the data particularly? This is domain specific. We have an ecology lesson who are aimed at ecologists, genomics, geospatial, and social sciences, which in South Africa, these are the workshop I focus mostly on in 2020. Lastly, we have library carpentry. So the audience here is individuals who work in the library and information science settings. These are more modular, centered around core objects and lessons. So a lot of the time, researchers reach out to library staff and they would like to know more about different ways of cleaning up data or data management. And these lessons are focused on more the capacitating the library staff to reach out back to the research and say, you know what, we can offer you this workshop, et cetera, which Western Cape University, University of Western Cape, apologies, have done quite well in the past. Just a bit of a content related to what is inside the website, inside the lesson, sorry. What do we cover in these lessons? We have a software component and then a research development component. Within the software component, we look at how can we automate repetitive tasks? How can we transform step-by-step workflows into scripts and functions and essentially to automate our scripts to run, we don't have to recode them every single time. Also using version control to collaborate and manage code openly. And we use Git. I don't know if you're familiar with Git or GitHub, but this is an open source software that we make use of quite often. The carpentries, our website's running off that, our lessons are run off that. Any website that we run within the carpentries are run off this version control software. Now, with regards to data analysis and research practices, we focus really on using data or writing scripts where we have to repeat analysis constantly. Think about a model you have to rerun in different populations. So writing once-off scripts and bringing new data sets and rerunning it. So it makes the life of the researcher much easier. We develop a data management and analysis plan. Our spreadsheets and our open refine lessons are amazing. If you sit there in the first time, how you can clean data. You can set spreadsheets up to make sure data capturing is done more validly, if you want to say. Making sure human error can be eliminated to the best of our abilities. We improve data management and project organization and using programming language like R and Python to reuse code again for the automation thereof. Now moving on, that I mentioned usually workshops run more or less over 2 full days, but the pandemic did not allow us with that. So the carpentries jumped in and we set up a task force, which I head globally, and we set out a recommendations for teaching carpentries workshops online. I will share the presentation with Sarah later on to distribute to everyone at the call. So the recommendations included what software is open, you can use, accessible to most, easy usable, maybe some instructions of how to apply it to the carpentry's pedagogy for teaching workshops. In South Africa, we started off in May 2020 and I piloted a 3 full-day workshop. What we found is the days were very, very long. We had multiple installation issues since a lot of individuals attending the workshop came now with institutional, desktop PCs, laptops, etc., and they did not have administrator access to install our studio or OpenRefine or some form of other open software. We also felt that trying to fulfill the need of that workshop to go through all the work, it just went too fast. And we reached out to the learners in the class and we said, what would you want a online workshop to look like in the future? And currently we are running it over 5 days from 9 to 1, taking regular breaks every 50 minutes because Zoom overload, it's a new word, it's a real thing. Sitting in front of the computer and trying to code together with the instructor, it really gets exhausting. We use stickies. So I don't know if you're familiar with sticky notes. The carpentries use them in in-person workshops where we raise a green one, are we good? We don't have any questions, or we're done with an assignment. Or we have a red one that says, please, I need help. Now, we're not in person, so we make use of the red and the green no Zoom has in a normal Zoom meeting. So this helped us check in the whole time, have continuous feedback from our learners. We had used the Zoom for chat. We asked learners to share their screen with us when they're having issues and trying to navigate coding on one screen. It's really difficult. So we have a pre-set up idea of, if you only have one screen at home, how can you maximally use your screen to have Zoom open, RStudio open, the lesson here at the bottom. So we really have developed this in South Africa to an extent where you can offer workshops on one screen. What is emerging now is we have a bonus module for certified instructors where we try and assist them transforming the in-person pedagogy to an online format. And we introduced a supporting instructor role where these are instructors who haven't taught that many times, but maybe can manage the Zoom room or manage the help room if someone is battling. Now, just quickly, a bit of an overview of how carpentries instructors are trained. We have trainers, and they would then run a 2-day instructor training workshop to volunteers, as Sarah did in July. And the instructors then teach the carpentries workshops to the learners. Now, during instructor training that the trainer hosts, instructors become more comfortable with the teaching pedagogy of the carpentries and how to run these workshops, how to set up a workshop website, etc. If you would have any more questions about that, please reach out. I'll share my contact information a bit later. Now, getting into the juicy stuff and the stuff which is my day-to-day bread in a sense, right, is the carpentries in South Africa. And just a brief overview of where we are and where did we come from. 2013, the first workshop was held at the University of Stellenbosch. Followed by 2016, the first instructor training event at the Northwest University's Potchefstroom campus. Inaugural meetups virtually for the African carpentries community, as we know it currently, was first held in 2017. We ran our first Carpentry Connect Johannesburg. Now, Carpentry Connect are local mini conferences regarding the carpentries. We have workshops, we have instructor training events, we have networking events. Let's help each other out how to best teach these curricula the carpentries have developed so well. And in 2019, in November, which is more or less a year ago, the carpentries appointed their first regional consultant in South Africa, which is me. So 2020, pandemic hit, and we had to revise a couple of things and how we want to do it in South Africa. And I'll touch on that a little bit later. Just to show you where we were with regards to workshops in South Africa, you see 2013, we had one, we peaked around 24 in 2018. And in 2019, we felt that a regional consultant will be there to help, I want to say, capacitate universities and help instructors host their own workshops at their universities. And currently in 2020, we have 13 either online or in-person events before the pandemic hit. We had 2 instructor training events, one in South Africa and one in Ethiopia. And we are looking forward to 2 more instructor training events early in 2021. Sorry, this year has flown past, right? Just quickly going through this, the carpentries use a lot of assessment techniques to see, are our workshops working in the context is being taught at? And when I started this position, I wanted to see, is there a difference between pre and post workshop surveys? So as part of the administrative process, the learners attending a workshop would get a link and they would answer various questions to benchmark where they are and what the expectations of the workshop would be. Five of the questions are based on their capacity to do certain skills, to write a small program, search for answers on the internet, find ways of overcoming programming problems, making use of software, and using programming language to either write a script or make their lives easier. And as you can see on the screen, very low numbers, and that's why I used the technique I did, mostly we have positive differences. So individuals would rank their ability on a scale of 1 to 5, and with the post survey, it would increase their perceptions of their abilities. And overall, an average learners who completed the post survey scored 9 out of 10 when recommending the carpentries workshop to a friend or a colleague. And this is a great score. I think this just is a testament to what we are doing globally, but more specifically in South Africa. And it's making a difference in the lives of researchers and young scholars alike. Just zooming into the South African initiatives we are currently busy with. We run monthly African carpentries meetups every fourth Thursday of a month. It's virtual meetups that include skill sharing, practical sessions of teaching carpentries workshop, and basically dealing with African problems and African solutions, which I'm very grateful for. We have grown from strength to strength from last year, November, to now, and we usually have 15 to 20 individuals all over the continent attending these calls monthly. As I've mentioned, we have a regional consultant now who wants to develop the region and the volunteer instructor base. The South African Center for Digital Language Resources, SADiLaR, based at the Northwest University's Potchefstroom campus, funded 10 online workshops in South Africa during the pandemic. It wasn't online to begin with. We were looking at hosting a workshop at UWC, and then the pandemic hit and unfortunately had to be canceled. But what the pandemic allowed us now is take the money we wanted to use for travel and accommodation of the volunteer instructors, helped us to support learners in the classroom with mobile data. So that was a little silver lining around the very dark cloud. We are currently really excited about the next project, Glossario. It's an open source glossary of terms and data science that's available online. And also we coded in R and in Python. So it's a community effort. We have individuals from the UK doing translations into Afrikaans. We're currently looking for translations in isiZulu. So if you have any individuals who might be interested in translating data science terms into South African languages, please reach out to me. It will be much appreciated. And lastly, we have an organization based in Germany at the moment. However, OpenSIDA is very interested in how low middle income countries deal with infrastructure issues, as in South Africa, load shedding. We have low bandwidth. Not everyone has access to internet and online information. Next up, we have a bunch of upcoming communities in Africa, and it's amazing. Ethiopia, we have the Research Data Alliance, which I mentioned earlier, running an instructor training event in November. And they're also running a data carpentry for ecology lesson for individuals in Ethiopia. In West Africa, we have the Women of Wakron, these amazing initiatives. 300 young ladies were given Raspberry Pis, which is a small little, Android device that they can use to learn coding in Python. This year, they are reaching out and see if they can teach them R. And it's all over West Africa. And unfortunately, I wish I could be there, but travel restrictions does not allow that currently. And Kenya, we have the Bioinformatics Hub of Kenya. They are running self-organized workshops in Kenya. We have a huge instructor base there as well. In Ghana, we have an upcoming community. Two independent instructors are trying to arrange workshops, and the carpentries, from a South African perspective, are trying to support them as much as we can. Now, I spoke a lot and I gave a lot of information, and I don't know, Sarah, how are we doing with time?
We're coming on to halfway through. So how much more do you have to go, Angelique?
I was hoping that you could share your experience as a learner, but if we don't have time, maybe 1 minute to, I don't know, can you share? I'm putting you on the spot now, right?
Absolutely. No,
so,
absolutely.
There we go. So Sarah joined the carpentries as an instructor in July 2020, and she helped out during a library carpentry workshop. I was just, maybe in one sentence or two sentences, you can share your experiences with us, please, Sarah.
Wow, it was To be honest, it was quite daunting kind of arriving in the world of data science as someone from a humanities background. And I found the Carpentries community so invigorating. It was really welcoming, a really wonderful community of people, and everyone just kind of committed to the idea of sharing. And I learned a great deal, and I still have a great deal to learn. But the area can seem extremely intimidating, but I think the Carpentries is a wonderful way to get your foot in the door as a beginner. But as an experienced person, also someone who is involved in computing, it provides a wonderful community of people to work with and best practices. Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah, so much. And I think the Carpentries focus on novices to helping them help themselves in the future. And I think that's exactly what you touched on, Sarah. Thank you so much. So last but not least, I just want to invite you to join the Carpentries community in any capacity, if it is an African Carpentries member, a member organization, a maintainer of the lessons, perhaps a future instructor trainer. I don't know. I want you to reach out to me. My information is there, but I'll provide a copy to Sarah to distribute as well, together with the link of this video. If you would like to make an appointment to have a chat with me about other initiatives you would like to get involved with, I have a calendar link there. You can make a direct appointment. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about what the University of the Western Cape is doing. And over to you, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Anjali. Sorry, give me a sec. I've always been really impressed by the larger Carpentries community, but also by Angelique's own energy and commitment to the field. So thank you for being here. Hopefully it sparked some interest in some more of the UWC's researchers. Our second speaker is Professor Mattia Vaccari. He is Director of eResearch and Research Professor in Astroinformatics at UWC. Professor Vaccari is from Italy, and before coming to South Africa, he was at the University of Padova and at Imperial College in London. His work is at the junction between astronomical instrumentation, big data processing technologies, and extragalactic astrophysics. He coordinates UWC's data-intensive research emerging niche, which brings together researchers from different fields to foster multidisciplinary collaboration in big data science. As ILIFU Facility Director, he oversees the selection and the execution of data-intensive research projects in astronomy and bioinformatics being run on this cloud computing data-intensive research infrastructure. Thank you very much, Professor Vaccari. Leave it to you.
Sarah, should have done it in advance, but yeah, seems to work fine. So can you all see my screen now? I didn't hear a yes. I guess that's a yes. Okay, good, thanks. Okay, and sorry, I just realized that this is the wrong title slide. Of course, this is not the ACT GC, but this is the Open Access Week. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about, my perspective, but also UWC's work in what we call data-intensive research. It's a bit of a mouthful, and I'll try to unpack it. And I'll also tell you a little bit about the way I see, the mission of the eResearch office at UWC, which is to build on advanced IT services of all kinds to improve research processes. So, right. We hear a lot about the, let me just get rid of the cursor here. Okay, we hear a lot about the fourth industrial revolution, and of course, this is a large part of what I'm going to be talking about. It does help, however, to be taking stock and to have some perspective on what an industrial revolution actually looks like. We are sort of here. In the big scheme of things, and there are already talks about a fifth industrial revolution, where the advances of big data will be coupled, with sense of purpose and inclusivity. So a human touch, to the fourth industrial revolution, if you like. But it does help to think back, to the first industrial revolutions that were, more akin, I mean, to what we think of as industry. So the fourth industrial revolution has got a strong component that is about data, and data that is big, sometimes open, carefully protected, by big tech companies and the like. Now, how does research feature in this scheme? So data-intensive research, can be applied, to all sorts of things. We have got some examples, in mind, from either our own research or from news in the media. But here I'm taking a few examples, that are relevant for UWC's own research, but you can think of many others. Now, of course, my own expertise is in astronomy, so we use a lot of computer vision techniques to improve, the quality of our images. But in medicine, for instance, in studies of TB, there are lots of opportunities, to apply sophisticated techniques, to improve the capabilities of experts, of clinicians, in assessing, the status of patients and the like. But then there are also more, down to earth and crucial. In this day and age of climate change and difficulties in reaching the sustainable development goals, so data-driven agronomy has become a very powerful proposition lately, because we have a way, to assess, the climate, very rapidly, from Earth observation data. We have ways, to deploy drones and sensors, in order to manage the soil and to take stock of the quality of the crop, and basically to measure productivity and try to improve the yield and to improve the quality of our produce. And last but not the least, the ever present, problem of poverty and associated diseases and malnutrition, stunting, and other phenomena in South Africa, is something that UWC has worked on, quite a lot. And there are ways in which, the data, provided by surveys as well as data, from mobile phone companies and the like, can be used, to probe the problem of poverty, malnutrition, and to try and suggest, ways to get around it. Now, I will take a step back, and go back, to my favorite field, of astronomy. So back in the day, when I started as a graduate student, very often you would be given, such an image, a beautiful image by the Hubble Space Telescope, and you would be expected, to measure, the brightness and the color of sources, sure, with computers, but basically on an individual manner. So you would focus on individual objects, you would take careful measurements, with your favorite software. Very often it was an obscure software package that you purchased at a substantial cost, and so on and so forth. But these days, the difficulties in doing that, are rapidly growing. This is a picture of the typical rate of data taken during one night, at a radio telescope over the course of time. And as you can see, in the early 2000s, we used to take, about a terabyte of data per night, which was large, but not impossibly so. But starting with the JVLA, but increasingly with MeerKAT, that is our own radio telescope in South Africa, the rate of increase, in the sizes of data taken at radio telescopes is soon going to overtake, our capability to store it and to transfer it effectively. So this, along with similar challenges in other fields like bioinformatics and Earth observations, which South Africa is also investing quite a lot, has precipitated the need to think carefully about how you implement, big data technologies. And South Africa has devised, a national system to provide tools to do that. So these are the three components of the system. The system is basically conceived to allow researchers as well as the industry, to transfer data via Sunrin, to store data via DiRISA, and to compute, so to carry out lots of time-consuming computations on the data, and this is driven by the CHPC. Now, these are national services, so they're provided, I mean, at a few points of contact, and very often, I mean, they are most effectively used by experts in the field. So as much as you have user support, I mean, it is still difficult. I mean, well, there are still some barriers to entry, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. So what has become more interesting lately, I mean, for the end user, I mean, for the researchers, I mean, the long tail of researchers who don't have a huge expertise in data-intensive research, are smaller infrastructures, I mean, smaller support structures at the university, which we call, a university innovation cluster, for lack of a better word, where, I mean, a few small facilities can be deployed and maintained by individual research groups or, well, in my case, I mean, by the research office. And by relying on being close to the researchers, I mean, you can devise training activities and you can drive the uptake of such new technologies, I mean, more directly. And once, I mean, you develop, I mean, a critical mass, and once, I mean, people become reasonably expert, I mean, at handling, I mean, these technologies, they can then upscale their work, I mean, by applying, I mean, for resources at the CHPC and at other facilities around the world. So this is the vision, I mean, that I would like, I mean, to realize at UWC. And in our field of astronomy, I mean, this has meant relying on cloud computing quite a lot. Cloud computing is a new model, I mean, with respect to the traditional high-performance computing that has been the main workhorse, I mean, for research computing, I mean, until, 10 years ago, perhaps. So cloud computing has got a number of features, but I think here I would like to focus on it being driven mostly by open technologies. So sure, I mean, a lot of the clouds that are available commercially are commercial services, but they're based on open technologies. So anybody, including a researcher, I mean, can deploy, I mean, a cloud computing facility using open technologies. And you can often do that, I mean, at a substantial reduced cost, I mean, compared to industry offerings. And also you can federate different clouds, I mean, to pool resources. So if different universities got access, I mean, to different computing facilities with a little bit of effort, they can bring them together and use, I mean, the joint power, I mean, of facilities spread across the country or the world. So by using these technologies, I mean, at IDEA, the Institute for Data Intensive Astronomy, we devised what we called a data intensive research cloud, which is largely driven by the OpenStack technology, which, I mean, as the name goes, I mean, is actually open source. So the idea is that a user, I mean, everywhere around the world, I mean, would be able to access, I mean, the multi terabyte, I mean, and often and soon multi petabyte data produced by radio telescopes, for instance, I mean, via their browser, and they will be able to visualize things, but also, I mean, write computer programs, I mean, via your browser, and they would be able to run on the remote infrastructure, I mean, in real time, without having, I mean, to have to install, I mean, large workstations, I mean, in your office or down the corridor. And this is actually even more important because in this day and age, a lot of the artificial intelligence technologies are also open source. So, this is just a small project where we tried to classify, I mean, radio sources based on their morphology. So we had a few classes, I mean, that we were interested in, and we used, I mean, deep learning, so neural networks effectively, I mean, by using Google's own open source software, TensorFlow, to classify them and to produce a template, a pilot project that would allow us, I mean, in the days of the SKA, to classify many millions and eventually many billions of sources in an effective manner without having to rely on thousands of graduate students. And so moving on from astronomy, our colleagues at SEMBI, the Institute for Bioinformatics, have also got, I mean, substantial and similar, I mean, requirements, I mean, for compute and storage. By and large, I mean, they they range, I mean, from the conventional high-performance computing, where basically you have to complete many consecutive tasks quickly, one after the other. And this is, for instance, often required in drug compound modeling, where you do biochemistry and on molecular chemistry on the drug compounds. But also you need high throughput computing. So computing needs to be running on lots of data. So this is more data centric, and very often you need to complete the same task on a lot of data. And this is, for instance, useful in finding genes that are switched on and off, I mean, respectively in a genome sequencing. So there are needs, I mean, for both traditional performance computing and more, cloud-based, I mean, high throughput computing. There are also other interesting problems, I mean, particularly in data and network limited context. For instance, one of the problems we have is across Africa is our digital pathology kits, I mean, the technology, I mean, to acquire and to sequence, I mean, DNA has shrank in size, I mean, over the course of 5 years, I mean, by, orders of magnitude. But very often, I mean, the data that are generated by these facilities are very large, and they can hardly be transferred, I mean, effectively. So very often, I mean, it is more effective, I mean, to move code, I mean, to the data. So if you provide code, I mean, via your favorite platform, GitHub is very popular, of course, for instance, and you have, I mean, DNA sequencing facility, I mean, somewhere in Africa, I mean, you can then download the software, I mean, to the sequencing facility and apply, I mean, the data analysis, I mean, to your data that is without having to move it. So the interplay between moving the data and moving the code is becoming an important factor, I mean, in Africa. And as much as we are discussing about 5G and maybe satellite-based internet, I mean, via the Starlink satellites, this will still be an important aspect, I mean, of research across Africa for years to come. Last but not the least, I mean, our colleagues at Zambia have also worked a lot on community engagement in order to try and, get buy-in, I mean, from the community. This is a book, I mean, co-authored by our Alan Christophers at Zambia, where, I mean, the idea of biobanking, sequencing and getting hold of biological data in an anonymized fashion, I mean, from the population across South Africa was, explained, and the importance, I mean, clearly, and the security of the process detailed, I mean, to the end user. And this is an example of a way in which also the intensive research can be, approached, I mean, at a more familiar level, I mean, with the general population. We also do training activities, and lately, I mean, a postdoc working with the forensic DNA laboratory, I mean, Ryan Daniels, I mean, has used, I mean, our intensive data intensive research cloud, I mean, to run a big data genomics workshop, where, I mean, there was training, I mean, on the Unix systems and command line tools, I mean, which is by and large, I mean, the main technology, I mean, to run computer clusters. There was also training on more specific, I mean, tools related to HPC and the containerization. So how can you package, I mean, software, I mean, for distribution, I mean, to people, I mean, around the world without having them to install, I mean, the software painstakingly on their own systems. And then, of course, the more genomic specific techniques as well. And this was held virtually, as all things are. And so basically, the 12 or so attendees, I mean, connected, I mean, remotely, I mean, to the cloud, I mean, using their browser, and they were able, I mean, to run things both from the command line and from the browser in order to produce plots and to check, I mean, the results of their computations. Last but not the least, how am I doing with time, Sarah?
You're doing okay, Mattia. Maybe another 5 minutes?
I'll be quicker than that, I believe. Last but not the least, our Center of Excellence in Food Security has been slowly, I mean, building up capacity in this area and applying, I mean, ever more sophisticated statistical techniques to the data. In this field, the classic data that people have got access to is not big per se, because very often, I mean, you use data-driven, well, data-derived, I mean, from demographic service, for instance. So the overall size is somewhat limited. But the challenge and the opportunity is now to be able to link and merge this data with other novel kinds of data, like data, I mean, from mobile companies about, I mean, the positioning of mobile devices, about, well, transactions and how, I mean, people spend their money. But also data about, well, also data from Earth observations that can allow you, I mean, to track climate droughts, for instance, and other aspects of, for instance, the distribution of urban versus rural populations versus, I mean, the building patterns across the different areas. And a couple of interesting examples of this study that Julian May kindly provided me are shown here. In one example, we have a study of childhood malnutrition that, well, you would imagine, I mean, would be decreasing in South Africa. But the raw data, I mean, seem to tell a different story. So it does seem that actually child malnutrition is not decreasing, if not quite the opposite. I mean, it's actually increasing in South Africa. And while there is no strong hypothesis, I mean, at this stage about why that's going to happen, we're trying to work, I mean, with data science techniques. Well, we're thinking about using data science techniques in order to bring together the assorted amount of data that I discussed earlier in order to try and answer the question of why and where, I mean, childhood malnutrition is actually increasing. And similarly, in another study, Julian and others, I mean, studied how the physical environment affect childhood malnutrition in South Africa. And surely enough, I mean, we did find a correlation, but these are early days and the full power of this data fusion, I mean, from different sources is still to be unleashed. Certainly in Africa, I mean, that's one of the key things, I mean, that we would like to start working on. Okay, last but not the least, I'll put up a slide that is very heavy and I won't expect you to read through it. This is just my way to argue that data intensive research at UWC is important not only for the researchers and the, well, and the students, but also for the leadership in order to be able to access data, I mean, more transparently about the institution, and also, well, for ICS and for the library in order to develop, I mean, skills, I mean, that are going to be required in order to provide, I mean, support to a modern university. So I think there is a lot that we can learn, I mean, from data-intensive researchers, I mean, who have started to ask some of the tough questions and learned about some of the sophisticated tools early on. And lastly, speaking, I mean, to the topic of Open Access Week, I think that it is fair to say that data-intensive research is driven and will be increasingly driven by open technologies, because we really want to be able to try out things, I mean, without having to be bogged down, I mean, by decade-long, I mean, contracts, I mean, with software vendors. We also want, I mean, for researchers and postgraduate students to be able to learn and reuse their skills in any future post without having to acquire, I mean, expensive software solutions, I mean, as they move, I mean, from institution to the industry or to another research institution. And also, I mean, these open technologies are rapidly being developed. I mean, they are technologies that are being used, I mean, by the data science industry. And so in order to thrive in the modern and in the near future workplace, I think that a way to future-proof your career is to actually work very hard on these technologies. And last but not the least, the field of innovation and in data science is, of course, thriving. And there's just a lot of investment, I mean, that is coming in, I mean, either from South Africa or from abroad. And Cape Town has got a thriving data science industry. So for UWC to be a fertile ground, I mean, for these developments, I think that we need to work very hard, I mean, on open technologies and open software, including, I mean, Python and R, as advocated by the carpentry. So this is these are our contact points here at the bottom at the e-research office. So if you would like advice, I mean, about your data intensive research and research data management needs, please get in touch with us. And if you need, I mean, access to either in-house or regional, national, or international computing resources, please drop us an email, and we'll make sure, I mean, to point you in the right direction. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Mattia. It's clear that research is becoming more and more data-driven, and I think that both presentations today were perfectly fitting for our Open Access Week activities. Thank you both for sharing with us. Before we move into some questions, I'd like to remind everyone to fill in the very brief feedback form that you've been emailed. You can also add any questions that you might have not gotten to during the session. Okay, on to questions. There've been a couple in the chat, and I'll bring them up here. A question from Shalene. How are librarians responding to the Carpentries program? I think this is something that it would be nice to address here publicly from Angelique, because I see a lot of my colleagues and the attendees, and we all work at the library. Angelique, could you answer that?
Thank you so much. Thank you for that. That's a great question. Just to give you a bit of background, my background's in educational psychology. So I started in psychology, no programming background, nothing at all. And I think it was very daunting for me to start with. And I see my supervisor for my master in the call, Prof. Kitching. Hello. It's nice to see you again. Right. And I think this is where it comes in, that the Carpentries have their lessons structured in such a way that it starts right at the beginning of how to break up, build up your skill level. And the Carpentries lesson, I shared a link in the chat, I'll do that again if you would like me to, it really breaks down into a theoretical part. Why do we want to do this? How do we do that? With actual live coding examples. So in the workshop itself, your instructor will code and you will have the program open in front of you and you'll code together with them. So when an error occurs, and that's what's daunting, when this big red and green comes here at the bottom, you're like, what should I do now? The instructor's there, the helpers are there, you raise your sticky or in virtually or your red sticky in Zoom and you reach out and help. The lessons are based on novices, individuals with no programming or coding experience whatsoever. And it builds you up to a certain level so you can help yourself in the future. So I hope I answered your question, Charlene, or any other questions in the audience.
Thanks, Angelique.
Yeah, thank
Hopefully
you.
This might lead to another workshop at UWC soon.
Yeah.
Another question that popped up here, this is for either of you or both of you. What is the role of the university in Africa in empowering researchers to work more confidently with data?
Well, that's a tough one. I think universities are by design, I mean, somewhat traditional institutions. So I think it's fair to say that that a lot of universities are finding it difficult, I mean, to help, I mean, users, I mean, to help, I mean, researchers and students in this transition. And so at UWC, we have several initiatives, I mean, that are somewhat separate in nature. I mean, we have on one end, I mean, of course, we have new programs, I mean, in data science. Well, there was a program in health information management, of course, that was rather popular, and we're going to be relaunching a program in health data analytics. And that's on the teaching side. As far as helping out, I mean, the researchers and but also, I mean, the support staff in making sense of this, I mean, we have the CIACT that is been providing, I mean, support, I mean, for using, I mean, a number of tools. I mean, it's actually been focusing quite a lot on the teaching side, because yeah, this year, I mean, it's been very difficult, of course, to make things work, I mean, on the teaching side. But they've also been providing support to use, I mean, Google tools, I mean, also for spreadsheets and the like. So that might also be a useful avenue to pursue. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I would like to see a more integrated, I mean, strategy, I mean, both for ICT investment, but and also for training investment. But and yeah, the carpentry is well, the carpentry is an interesting example of what people can achieve, and we would like to build on that, also create follow-up courses, so more advanced courses based on a cohort of people who went through the carpentry instruction and found it helpful and wanted to develop things further. So I don't know if that answers the question. I think these are a few ramblings. I mean, but I think they go in the direction of UWC having a more concerted concerted response, I mean, to this big need that we see at this stage. Angelique?
Thank you. Yes, I agree, Mathieu. How can I want to say there's a big movement in Africa currently at the moment with open access, open science. So a lot of investments being made. However, the pandemic kind of put us a bit behind. But I think what the carpentry are trying to do is, yes, we do have member organizations where it involves a financial contribution and we train instructors and host workshops for you. But we do have a self-organized workshop. So if your organization have a couple of instructors, and we do have open instructor training events. That's where Sarah popped in with the Northwest Universities. So we offer a couple of seats out to neighboring universities in South Africa to grow the community. If you have a couple of instructors have gone through that process, you can self-organize workshops. Attending the African Carpentries Monthly Call, seeing what's out there, what's happening, where funding is available. Because in this forum, a lot of people from Nigeria, Ghana, even Botswana, Namibia share, we want to run a workshop online. We have funding for that. And it means we could fly people, well, in non-pandemic situations, we can fly out to Ethiopia, to Botswana, to Namibia, etc. But not only that, grow the research capacity, have perhaps a workshop fund for University of the Western Cape to take out of that from a grant, etc., etc. I've seen this a lot happen in the States and Europe at the moment, that grants are available to host workshops at a certain institution. And it's a third-party grant. It's not funded by the university. So if we can talk about this more in the African Carpentries Meetup Monthly, we can work together and try and grow a South African community, not just only a university organizational one. So that from my end, what we are doing, and this is 1 year in, so I cannot wait what the next year is going to hold for South Africa and how we're going to grow even further.
Thank you both for those answers. We just have a couple of minutes left, and I know that our speakers both need to be somewhere else by 11, so I will close this up here. Thank you to our speakers. That was really, really informative and a really great start to the Open Access Week. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.